Friends, welcome back into God's house once again to hear about how faith is going to play out in active life. What it looks like to go into the scriptures and see the lives of those who are challenged just as we are, maybe even beyond anything we have experienced. And God held them firm. I want to review, and it's worth getting this equation into our heads and hearts. Do you remember that in the first of these series, we talked about how the balance lies with who, not what? What we learned was the who that we trust in is greater than the what that we fear. Can you say that with me? The who that we trust in is greater than the what that we fear. And we talked about the faithful God. He always keeps His promises. He is there from the very beginning and has seen everything through, even as He is present now. In week two, we talked about the power of God to create the universe. Actually, there we began to look at the promise to Abraham. He took Abraham out, showed him the stars, and the very power that made the universe is on Abraham's side, on ours. And we need that because there's something even greater than that power. It's the love of God that would compel him, that he would say, even if I have to suffer, even if I have to take your burden on and onto my son, I will take it away from you and rescue you. Then in week three, Pastor Kelm took us into Genesis 50 with the story of Joseph. And we talked about, just as in the first song today, how people are scarred and scared. And that when you are in that condition, you need to learn how to let God sort it out, to let God settle the score. And so today, we're going to talk about God's timing. God's involvement comes right down to the very personal level. We don't always recognize that. We sometimes come in and out of church, we come in and out of the scripture, and we act as though it's for everybody else. And you know, he's not like a human who's running the universe and that he gets overwhelmed or distracted. The kids were having a special pre-K celebration and they were singing their songs. The family assembled and the little daughter was up there and she's singing with all of her heart, "My God is so great, my God is so strong, there's nothing my God cannot do for you." And they all pointed and everybody smiling. And then they saw that there was one little boy right next to the daughter, granddaughter, that had a little extra intensity. So he aimed at Grandma with all his body and all his pointer finger and said, "I'm pointing at you!" And everybody laughed because little ones have a way of making the point. You see, that God, if He's on your side, then who can be against you? What can cause anything to stop His love? Now today we're going to talk about, as you see on the screen, that God is already there. He's ahead of us in our tomorrows. You're going to see two things, the delay and what it does to us, and then the impossible and what it does for us. What we see as delay may be good for growth. You go back to Genesis 18. And we're going to learn there that every detour has a way of whittling away at our confidence in God. And it did for them. It does for us. Sometimes there's one thing that gets in the way of faith and faith in action. It's the weight of life. By that I'm not spelling it W-E-I-G-H-T. I'm spelling it W-A-I-T. Do you remember when you were a kid? How much longer? You know, vacation seemed like we were in the car way too much. I have to wait. And we get impatient, and you know, even though we're all grown up, most of us, we still aren't that good at waiting. In fact, God's plan can seem hard when He tells us to wait a little bit more. You see, she was only 4 years old when Dad came to the pastor and said, My daughter has a brain tumor. They don't know what they're going to do. What I don't understand, Pastor, is why. Why would a little one have to go through so much suffering? And the pastor said, well, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And they did. On their hands and knees, on their daughter's bed, they would pray more than all of us combined have ever done. And through the next years, they would walk with her through 17 brain surgeries. And she would not see her high school graduation. During her last year, just before she turned 18, the brain tumor was inoperable and continued to grow. And it was at the point where the father came to the pastor again and said, Pastor, I don't get it. Why? Why is my little girl going to be taken? The pastor said, well, I don't know. Let's just wait and see. And they thought that at the funeral, perhaps, it would fulfill her greatest desire. She had said, if even only one person comes to faith because of my suffering, if only someone was affected. And they waited and watched. Was it a nurse? Was it a doctor? Was it a friend? But they didn't exactly see that. There was no evidence that anyone had been changed by her life. So the pastor received another visit by the dad, and he said, why? I don't understand. And the pastor said, can you still believe? He said, yes. Then we need to wait and see. And now maybe your story isn't as tragic as that or as difficult, but I'm sure you've had your own part of the story. Maybe it's that half your life or all your life you've lived with trying to recover from abuse. Maybe it's because you have disease in the family or even a genetic thing that has gone from generation to generation. Maybe there's chronic pain in your body, and when you wake up, you wonder, how am I going to make it again today? You see, we know that the prayers of a righteous person, a believer, are effective, and yet we don't always have the ability to wait to the end of the story, and it feels like God hasn't heard. I guess we'll have to wait and see. After such a long delay, the wait was killing Abraham and Sarah's faith. Now you have to put this into perspective. The two people that we should be asking about this are in our text. Their life plays out on the screen before us. As they've been waiting, now it's life as usual. Three visitors come. And you remember that God had already shown Abraham the stars, but that was long ago. The three visitors arrive. When Sarah had heard the first promise, she was 65 years old. And now, oh, they've waited a long time. You know, to ask them, how could you believe for so long? They would come back and say, we had to learn about God's timing. When she had first heard it, she wondered if it could be true that after the time when she should be able to bear children, she would become pregnant. And so that they had looked forward in the next days or the next months or the next years. Here's going to be this gift of a child. Some of you might even know what that feels like. But decades? It was 24 years from the time that the promise was given until the baby was born. And while I won't be reading it, in chapter 21 it says she had a son just as God had said. Now, in this story, God is going to make a memorable visit to reinforce for them that you can trust him during the long wait. There were three. We would say that it's likely two angels and God, very clearly God. You might even say it's Jesus, the pre-incarnate. And so Jesus comes and arrives, and you're going to witness Abraham and Sarah, not just with southern hospitality. I mean, that's grand. I've been there. But this was ancient near Mideast. And Abraham, when he saw the guests, was going to make a real affair out of it. He's going to do this upright. So he does what every man in the ancient near Mideast would do. He goes, Sarah, You need to cook a nice dinner. Well, that still happens today in America, doesn't it? It's sort of like, yeah, here come the guests. Sarah, get ready. And it says in the text, you may not find this on your iPhone, there are three seahs of fine flour. Abraham specifies how much she's supposed to bake the bread. Do you know what that is? When calculated out, it's 36 pounds of bread. Enough for 100 people. There's only three guests sitting out there. Sarah goes to work. Oh, it's going to be a busy day. She rolls up her sleeves. And Abraham, remember, he's 99 years old, strolls out by the servant who's flipping burgers. No, he didn't have burgers on that day. They're looking at the cow and the calf, and he says, we aren't going to raise this one. This one's going for our guests today. So they take the calf and prepare a meal. Now, when this is all happening, Sarah must be wondering, who are these people that Abraham's paying so much attention to? And Abraham may have indeed gotten a grasp that this is a special visitor. And it's going to be evident when the visitors finish the meal and they turn to Abraham and say, he's over there by the tree, Abraham, where's your wife? And he goes, well, she's back by the tent. And sure enough, Sarah wanted to make sure this was a big deal, and she's listening. She's overhearing all of this. She might be working her fingers to the bone, but she's in it. She's wondering, how have things been going? And so, Jesus then says, this time next year, Sarah's going to have a baby. And Sarah laughs. Now, you can understand that, can't you, when it's that much time that has gone by. The wait, her reaction, well, it's right in the text. Moses says, they're too old. They are too old to have a baby. And so Sarah's like, oh man, when I'm all worn out, now you expect to give me this pleasure? Do you know that Dawn Brooke is the celebrated oldest natural mother from the United Kingdom? Do you know how old she was when she gave birth? 59. Some of you are going like, wow. But Sarah's 30 years beyond that. So you can just imagine why she's chuckling. This can't even happen. And then it does. She's pregnant. She's going to the local grocery store and a bubbly cashier says, oh, it's great to see you and your great-grandchild. No. Grandson? No. You gotta be kidding. She says, yeah, I'm kidding. And in the middle of the night when she's dragging herself out of bed like a zombie at 2 a.m. trying to feed and clean, and she hollers out to her 99-year-old husband, Abraham, get me a diaper! No, not yours, the baby's. Oh. Sarah had heard this promise before. And she was supposed to have a son. She laughed because it was ridiculous. And it had been so long. And that's where verse 13 kicks in. This is the real key to the whole text. He says, why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? You know, they did believe, even though it was difficult and there's signs of a weakness there. It's important to see, as we merge into part two, what it says in Hebrews 11. By faith, Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, without children, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. Here's the essential question. Is anything too hard for God? I'm going to teach you one more thing. This is a different perspective. And I was going to bring my big book up. It's Seminary Notes. It's about 3 inches thick and 8.5 and 11. I was going to drop it right down there on the floor like that, but I was afraid I'd cause somebody to have a heart attack when they wake up and go, what's going on? in that, there are thousands of passages that were written down about every subject in the Scripture about God's plan of salvation. Do you know that in the section on attributes of God, how many pages there are on God is love? 22 pages. Do you know how many pages are there for God is powerful? 15. God is faithful? 12. But there's one more attribute that hasn't been taught, so we're coming at this one to see the timing. God is eternal. Well, what does that mean? I'm about to give you a brain freeze, but first the passage from Deuteronomy that puts it into perspective. In Deuteronomy 33, Moses, who wrote all of this, was tied together with God's promise. He says, "The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. He will drive out your enemy before you, saying, 'Destroy him,' so Israel will live in safety alone." The eternal God is your refuge. You know that for eternity we use the symbol of a circle. No beginning, no end. And that God who is eternal is in a way that we are not at all. Is that He has been and always will be. He is the heartthrob of the universe. Now, it's important to understand this concept of eternal as it relates to us. We always have another tomorrow, and in eternity, God is already there ahead of us. What I want you to see is that God doesn't need 10 devices. He doesn't need a wall of TVs to see the moments when He looks at you sitting here and worshiping today, learning about the faithful, eternal God. He already is seeing your death and the day that you will meet Him face to face. But He's aware of your birth and the first cry that you gave and what your mother's voice sounded like. He has been there on the day of your marriage. He's watched you get a speeding ticket. He's helped you get up and recover when you broke your leg. Everything is all one. I want to show you something in a video that demonstrates the human perspective versus the perspective of God. Now, what you're going to see is doors. And what we go into on each new phase of life is a door. You come to the door, you open it up, and you move forward. You cannot see beyond what you're seeing ahead of you. Well, it's a part of life. Maybe it's graduation, kindergarten, eighth grade, high school, and then another door. Leads into the development of life and maybe the gift of a baby and a new life ahead of you, another phase or stage of life. You got so many now that you need an SUV and on it. But you can't see beyond. You didn't know you were going to have 3, 4, 5 children. And all you can do is approach the next door. What's between? Maybe it's illness. Maybe it's a challenge you're not sure of. Maybe it's vacation. Oh yeah, I want that one, right? And through the doors, a bike accident, a near death of a child, we're not sure. Because we only see today. We cannot see tomorrow. What will be at our table, what will be our blessings, what will be our challenges. But I'm talking today about God's divine perspective. That He sees it in a different way. He sees it from eternity. And from eternity, it's all one. And all at one time. And He not only sees you, but He sees every other life at the same time. It is so big that your brain cannot wrap around it. Don't try. If He understands all that, then when Sarah looks at him and says, "I've waited 24 years, he goes, "Yeah, I know, but it's behind door number 4. And when a dad says, "My daughter, 17, why is she dying?" It's behind door number 12. And when you are struggling with something, it's behind another door that you cannot see, but God sees it. You need to understand that because it's so obvious sometimes, even in your own life, and you miss it. Now, I'm one of those people that pushes the calendar a little bit, and I because I've got so tight of a schedule, I sometimes forget to get gas. And not long ago, I was running just about out. No, it did say 0, but my car got to the gas station. So I was a little preoccupied when I went to put the gas in. I was like thanking the Lord that I got there, and I went to put the gas in, and striped, and no gas. Started over, did it again. No gas. I said, wow, the pump must be broken. Moved my car, did it a third time, didn't work. Fourth time, didn't work. And that's when I finally saw the sign. It says, stripe your card and pick your gas level before you pick up the pump handle. I was standing there with pump handle in hand. It's so obvious. But you know, the reason that we miss it is because we often think God is not on our side or God doesn't know. But he sees it all from beyond. I call it bald spots in heaven. When Bob died, he was ushered into the front room in heaven. And as he was sitting there just amazed at everything, he saw many people joyful, smiling. But they all had a little bald spot right here on their head. And he was like, I wonder if everybody in heaven has that. And about that time, an angel tapped him on the shoulder and said, Bob, it's your appointment. Appointment? Where? What am I doing? He said, it's time for you to sit down with Jesus. He led him on down and out and on a long road, and they sat down in the living room in Jesus' house. And there on the coffee table was Bob's book, My Story. He opened up, and Jesus said, we're going to walk through things, Bob. Bob saw the picture of his birth, and he had been told the story many times. And he goes, oh, yeah, isn't it wonderful? And then he saw a little picture on the side of a man he didn't recognize. He said, Jesus, who's this? And he goes, well, that's the janitor that worked in the hospital where you were born. And he said, I didn't know him. And Jesus said, I know you didn't, but I did. And Bob said, well, what's he doing in my book? And Jesus said, I thought I would tell you. This is the janitor that was working just outside your hospital room. That was the day he heard your parents praise God, thank him in prayer. And that was the first time I ever heard him say, maybe I should look into things eternal. Maybe I should think about following God. Went on and they saw a picture of him in black. He said, that was the most horrible day of my life. I was 15. My dad died so young. Who are those pictures of these three men in the other picture, Jesus? He said, well, those are the three men that worked with your dad. They were so affected by this that they came to the funeral. And at the funeral, your mother was the one that comforted them, even though they should have been comforting her. Of those three, one of them walked away, but the other two started coming to church. Oh, and did you notice this one was right there in the front gate? He was one of the smiling faces that you saw when you came home to heaven. Oh, I didn't know that. Jesus said, I know you didn't. And then they went to the end of his life, and as he was watching things shut down, how his wife was crying when he had the cancer and they knew he was going to die. And then he saw a picture of his wife on the phone and another picture of a lady on the phone, and he said, what's this? And he said, well, that's the lady from the insurance company that your wife comforted. The fact that she had gone through so much suffering with you, that the insurance really wasn't the important thing, but faith was. And she was able to get through to that lady on the phone, even though she hears thousands of stories, and that's the first night that that lady prayed to me. Now do you see the weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, that Jesus puts on our life? You see, we don't know the whole picture of our life's purpose, but God has already designed it. And in every tomorrow, we have something to celebrate. It's God letting us develop and grow. And we might have looked at our story and thought God messed it all up, but then you realize why they have a bald spot, because they get it. Oh, so often we don't realize what God is doing, and in the wait, we could lose our faith. But we are to trust God, because God's got this. He's already there. He's ahead of us. And he's looking at it from a divine perspective. And this is what I don't really understand, is when he looks at all those doors and all the times when I deviated and got away from my path, the one he wanted me to be on, and I botched it, lost it, fell into temptation and sin, that he saw it all. He knew it all ahead of time. And yet he loved me. It's because it isn't like a hair falling from the head of his loved child, but it is the blood of his own son that has run down his arms and legs to cover over my sin. And that when he sees me, he doesn't see me through the lens I see myself. He sees me through the lens of a perfect life. He sees me like he sees Jesus. And then it all begins to make sense. If God is in eternity, if God is for us, who can be against us? He didn't spare his own son, but he gave him as a sacrifice. It all makes sense up there. And that's what we believe, isn't it? Amen.